We've already got Jim, VE3JIW, signed in. This is K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick, and we're beginning the TechNet on Limelock. TechNet number 1518 of the series that began in September of 1982. You guys have heard this little introduction lots of times. The TechNet is primarily for inspiration and education. We particularly like to give inspiration to people who have curiosity, because that's the way mankind makes progress, by showing curiosity about almost anything, particularly when it comes to wireless, electronics, and electrons, magnetic fields, antennas and transmission lines, and propagation, and receivers, and so on. That's the kind of jazz we discuss primarily on the TechNet. Let me check. And the loosely held menu that we use is that the first hour or so of this group, consisting of Dick, K2RIW, that's who you're listening to, John, KC2WGB, Paul, WS2N, who has the space report, John does the mailbag, among other things, keeps track of those who are signing in by EchoLink. If by EchoLink you have trouble signing in, John will know about it and will know to make room for you. And we also have Hal, K6DPZ, who quite frequently give us the more brief answers by way of his experience with lots of electronics over the years. So the first hour is general ham radio questions, followed by the mailbag, followed by the space report. And I've heard a report today that NASA is apparently going to create a brand new shuttle of some kind. Hope Paul will make that clear to me. I heard a report about that this afternoon when I was at somebody's gathering. Let me drop. So in the beginning, if you do have a question or a comment for the net, you're going to sign in, give us your call letters and your name, followed by the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment. You need to sign. You need not sign in just because you're listening. After 31 and a half, going on 32 years, let's see now, September, next month will be 32 years of the TechNet. By now we believe somebody is listening. That doesn't have to be confirmed anymore. And I'm not going to do that mysterious thing that lots of net control operators do. I don't understand it. Ask the question, is there any emergency traffic at this time? Can you imagine the chances, the probability of somebody waiting because he just had his automobile accident and he wants to bring some rescue services and he just wants to do it exactly at that time, the chances of that happening? We don't do that. Okay, give me your call letters and name right now if you do have a question or a comment. K2LIW, we're listening.
Tell me, Dick, I have a question for the net and 2EO.
Okay, so far we've got Jim, we got Rich, somebody who said, good evening, Dick. Who was that?
Mike Bravo with a yes.
W2RY, Joe, yes.
Okay, we got Barry, we got Joe, RYY, and let's see, so far we've got Jim, Rich, Barry, and Joe. Anyone else to sign in with a question or a comment for the net? Give me your call letters and name right now.
QFTC, Denny. No questions.
Okay, I heard Vinny with no questions. I think it was FTC. One last call. Anyone with any questions or comments for the net? Give me your call letters right now. K2RIW listening.
Intuition, that's the pole.
Well, with a space report. Good evening, Dick. John?
Very fine, Paul. And Paul, we're, as I said, I'm hearing reports that NASA has apparently committed to building another renewable vehicle, space shuttle-like vehicle. Looking forward to hearing that. So first, we got Wes. I think Jim was the first guy that signed in from Canada. VE3JIW, what would you like to discuss tonight, Jim? From the Golden Triangle of Canada, K2RIW and the TechNet listening.
Quick question. I'm mobile but stationary. How copyright now before I go on VE3JIW?
Okay, Jim, mobile but stationary. You sound like you're dead full quieting. Plenty of audio. Nice hi-fi audio. You never sounded better, Jim. Please proceed. PE3JIW from Canada. K2RIW on the TechNet. In USA.
Okay, well, we got a repeater back because it lost a UPS, which was running the controller. Anyway, it's actually Golden Horseshoe, but I haven't heard the triangle. Anyway, it's the area all across North Lake Ontario, all the way to Niagara Falls. We don't quite reach the Niagara Falls on this machine. But anyway, last week you were talking about tubing, and you're talking about Echo Mike Tango tubing, which is really light. As it gets into heavier sizes, it gets harder to bend, but I can still bend 1-inch electromagnetic tubing, EMT, with a bender where you stand on it and tilt the handle. But when you mentioned piping, you didn't get into whether it's Schedule 10 or 20 or 40 or Schedule 80 for wall thickness. You recommended the aluminum tubing, and I don't know if aluminum tubing is the same as aluminum pipe in those ratings. But when you were saying an aluminum mast, did you spec a number or just a wall thickness and also the blend of aluminum? Because aluminum is an alloy of many different things. That was my only comment for the net, which is really from last week's net, back to net, K2RIW, DE3JIW.
Sound good, Jim. If I called it the Golden Triangle, I should have called it the Golden Horseshoe. As you're hearing a result of my poor memory, I remember the concept, not the exact words. My favorite type of tubing is aluminum tubing for a couple of reasons. It requires no maintenance, it's light, and if you buy it with a large enough diameter and a thick enough wall thickness, it's got more than enough strength. My favorite alloy of aluminum tubing for outdoor use is called 6061-T6. 6061 is the mixture. T6 is a certain level of thermal hardening. And that one has beautiful outdoor survival. A piece of 6061-T6 aluminum out in the weather for 10 years looks almost as good as it did on the day it was brand new. By comparison, 2024-T3. Another popular alloy. I do not recommend this one. Barry, when we get back over to Barry a little later on, N2MB, he and I did use some 2024T3 tubing. Sheet metal, I think it was. Beautiful for machine. Looks beautiful when it's brand new, but out in the weather with salt spread, oh boy, it starts looking homely real fast. So 6061T6 is my favorite. As you make the diameter of the aluminum tubing larger, you pick up extra strength by, I think it's a cube law. In other words, you double the diameter of the aluminum tubing, and the stiffness you pick up is something in the vicinity of 8 times stiffer. So even if you choose thin wall, aluminum tubing comes in all kinds of wall thicknesses, all kinds of diameters. The popular lengths are 12 feet and 24 feet. A little bit pricey. I'm very light on knowledge of
repeater. Time out.
I'm very light on knowledge of using steel tubing. Without a doubt, you get more strength out of the same diameter of steel tubing, schedule 20, 40, 80, whatever. But even the galvanized steel tubing, I think it's got a problem of a heck of a lot more weight, so that installing it in the top of the tower could be more difficult. It sometimes requires weatherproofing, because even with the galvanizing only lasts for a certain length of time. In an industrial environment, a well-galvanized, zinc-dip, hot-dip galvanized tower, after about 25 years, starts showing rusting. And I like to put up antennas where I own the antenna instead of the antenna owning me, so I'm a strong enthusiast of stainless steel, hardware stainless steel U-bolts, and saddles, and aluminum tubing. That's my opinion. Not everyone's going to agree with me on that. I'll bet you the guys listening tonight But some of you guys have used steel tubing and you like it, or you've used aluminum tubing and you've had some problems with it. So anything you can tell Jim from Canada, or your experience with tubing for masts or booms, for Yagis, or support hardware for multiple antennas, anything along the lines of tubing, and where do you get it? By the way, aluminum tubing, because as long as you get the right alloy, 6061T6, buying used aluminum tubing in a scrapyard, as long as your eye shows that it's got good enough quality, if you know what I mean, that'll please you as far as physical appearance is concerned, buying used aluminum tubing can save you an awful lot of money. So anybody with further information on tubing for masts or booms, give me your call letters right now, K2RIW and the TechNet. Yeah, I'm a little bit disappointed that no one's got any further information on that one. Jim, you're allowed to bring this question up again because you didn't get a full answer from my point of view from more than one person. You just heard my opinions. But I have used in the past 2-inch diameter, 1/4-inch wall, aluminum tubing, 2024, here we go, 6061T6, in 24-foot lengths where I've had about 5 feet of it or so inside of the tower and the rest all sticking out with lots of antennas on them. So you get an awful lot of strength out of that. And if you need more strength than that, then 3-inch diameter tubing is the way to go. It does represent a problem of finding the right size rotary bearing for the top of the tower, to find the right size U-bolts, many of the commercially made popular ham radio antennas without modification will not accept a 3-inch diameter piece of tubing with the U-bolts that they supply. But if you think you need more strength, my impression is go for diameter first, wall thickness second, in that order, because you pick up the strength, stiffness strength, a lot faster with diameter than you do with wall thickness. DE3JIW, K2RIW, I hope it helps a little bit, Jim. Go ahead.
We have 4 or 5 feet of 1-inch Schedule 40 pipe holding a Yagi off the side, and it's very rusty. It's been in since on a roof at a repeater site. 3-inch pipe is supporting a 4-bay. It has a coating of paint and it's strong, but I saw 4-inch aluminum. I don't know if it's pipe or tubing, it's how you measure, but it's 4-inch diameter. Or maybe it was 3, but it's huge for 40-80, which is a beam for 40 and 80. And there was a bit of movement on the bolts, and they sheared right through the tubing, and half the antenna fell down. That's a big 40-80 beam, way bigger than a TH6, I'm pretty sure. And I saw it fail, so I'm guessing the softness of aluminum was the problem with fasteners, and there's twisting, and it just opened up the holes, and the bolt pulled right through. But did you mention wall thickness of that you would use on 2-inch? Now, realize, when you say tubing, they measure the outside diameter often, so that maybe if you got 2-inch OD, thicker wall, it's thinner on the inside. Because pipe with thicker wall, it's thicker, it's larger diameter outside than the inside. If you get 2-inch pipe, the outside diameter of Schedule 40 is less than the diameter of Schedule 80 because the wall thickness starts from the inside out. Can you get, is 2-inch tubing 2-inch tubing, and you can order it in different wall thicknesses? So I just tripped and came back. So the question is, you didn't mention wall thickness for your recommended mask.
K2UPS has some information on that stick. Okay, we're going to pick up with John, with Rich. And in the case of the tubing that I buy, when I talk about 2-inch diameter aluminum tubing, that is outside diameter. And it's not called Schedule 40 because it's not intended for being pressurized, if you know what I mean. The kind of stuff that I've been buying. But I've got more information on the questions you asked, but let's first pick up Rich, K2 Uncle Papa Sita, probably mobile. And just for the fun of us there, Rich, tell us where you're located and tell us your experience with aluminum or steel tubing, K2UPS, K2IIW in the TechNet.
Good evening, Dick. I'm mobile right now. I'm just close to Ohio and to West Virginia on I-70, heading back to New York. I haven't bought any aluminum tubing, but I've had significant dealings with DX Engineering in Ohio, and I know that they carry a large supply of many different sizes, thicknesses, and lengths. I'm not sure what the alloy is because I haven't had to purchase it myself, but I do know they carry it. They probably do ship it to Canada. And they also have a really good supply of all different stainless steel hardware. So I could not hear the Canadian's transmissions because that's not coming through on Echolink. But if he hasn't looked at them before and he's having any difficulties locating stuff, he should maybe check out DX Engineering. That was it, Dick. Back to that K2UPS.
Very good, Jeff.
Very fine there, Rich. Eric recognized, and Eric, you just heard Rich saying that he's not hearing Echolink from Canada, so maybe you've got some words on that, and or aluminum tubing, or any kind of tubing. You put up some pretty big antennas on some pretty big mass. KE2EJ, give us enough audio. K2LIW, go ahead, Eric.
K2LIW, KE2EJ. I just wanted to warn folks that people who want to use water pipes, like Schedule 40 pipe is really good, except for the wind loading. Those pipes are really designed for carrying water, not necessarily carrying a physical load. But depending upon the size, and if you actually go to the engineering, mechanical engineering handbook, it will give you the loading that you can use for, you know, steel Schedule 40 pipe. The stuff is rather heavy. I've used it in a lot of instances. But you really have to be careful about how many square feet of load you put on it, because it's really not designed for structural integrity. It's really designed for carrying water. So I just wanted to put that 2 cents in. K2RIW, KE2J.
I thank you, Eric. Good information. When it comes to an elaborate structure made out of aluminum tubing, if you go to Mike Number 2's website, Mike Number 2 is K1FJM, and you'll see a picture of me in front of 16 Yagis, standing in the middle of an array of 16 Yagis, all held together with pieces of aluminum tubing and U-bolts. And that was a 3,500 cubic foot antenna, 16 Yagis on 432, mounted at the 100-foot level of a row number 6 tower. By way of a whole lot of guy wires, that tower, which is kind of a not very sturdy tower, it held up very nicely, and I got a lot of DX out of that antenna. So aluminum tubing measured by outside diameter, wall thicknesses, there's a lot of different wall thicknesses, everything from probably a 16th of an inch up to at least 1/4 inch and maybe even 3/8 of an inch, and 2-inch diameter tubing in many cases gives you a lot of strength from my point of view. There's a couple of catches though. Let me drop. If you've got a very long Yagi that's being mounted to an aluminum mast, many guys will make sure that the antenna is well balanced on the mast. That is gravity balancing. The most important balancing is wind balancing. Most Yagis have a lot more mast in front of the boom, a lot more boom in front of the mast than behind the mast. Behind the mast, you've got a tight stacking of reflector-driven element and the coax cable going to it. Let me drop. As such, you've got a lot of weighty stuff in the back. Therefore, quite often the mounting bracket for the boom of a long Yagi is aft of the center of the Yagi, and therefore wind load-wise, there's more boom out in front. Therefore, when the wind blows, the whole antenna wants to aim itself downwind. If you're smart enough to put the right size piece of vertical sheet metal mounted to the mast in the vicinity, here we go, mounted to the boom in the vicinity of the reflector. If you use the right size of a weather vane, let's call it, in the back of the Yagi, you can achieve wind balancing. When a antenna is wind balanced, the wind can blow as fast as it wants to from the side of the antenna, and the antenna will not try to aim itself upwind or downwind. The torque and swinging in the wind is what does an awful lot of damage to rotators, mounting brackets, and whatever. And if you have any fear your aluminum tubing with its U-bolts around it with the saddles, if you have any fear that that's going to slip and rotate on that mast, do not put a bolt through it thinking you're going to bind it. Absolutely not. Doesn't work. The bolt becomes a high stress point, which slowly whittles away and makes an egg-shaped hole. And if the aluminum tubing is being held with the U-bolts and a saddle, which is slipping, it's eventually going to cut through. You can't tolerate that slipping. Let me drop. So first of all, you're going to well balance your antenna. That array of 16 Yagis that you're going to see on that picture when you go to LimarcTechnet.com. Limarc, L-I-M-A-R-C. Technet.com. You go to that website and you look at that picture of me standing in front of this 16 Yagi array on 100 feet of tower, all with aluminum tubing, and that thing held together for 4.5 years. It had a calculated wind failure of 75 miles an hour. That was all very thin wall tubing in order to make that antenna light, because it had to all be assembled at the top of the 100 foot level of the tower in order to clear all of the tall guy wires that were holding up that tower. So that's not an example of a very high wind design antenna. That was a design. That was an example of a very light design. But if you have a fear that your U-bolt is going to be slipping, then use 2 or 3 U-bolts side by side with saddles, and make a big enough plate to do it. Or there's also a kind of a structure you can make where there are 2 half round pieces of sheet metal that pick up a whole great big long length of the mast. So there's various ways that you can hook onto the mast with enough U-bolts, with enough mounting hardware, so that you get a whole lot of holding force and it's not going to slip. Don't put a bolt through the mast to try to stop the slip, and make sure that slippage does not take place because of lack of wind balancing or not enough U-bolting and so on. You can buy all kinds of wall thicknesses. 6061 T6 requires no maintenance. It'll last you for 30 or 40 years, if you know what I mean, if you do it correctly. These are some of my opinions. Maybe it'll help somewhat, Jim. BE3JRW. And by the way, as you do more research on this, Jim, please come back and tell us whatever you find. BE3JRW in the Golden Horseshoe of Canada, KQRIW, down here in...
Repeater, time out.
You've got it, Jim.
Long on this. I know EMP in the air, it rusts very quickly. I found a piece of it outside for 2 years and it's very rusty. EMP would not be useful for any antenna projects. I think that the water pipe can't take heavy load. I'd agree with that because of the seam down the middle. We can talk about that, but I think we could get on to other people. You've given me the an alloy to look for and some good information. I think I'm going to listen along for the next contributor for question 2 tonight's Met. But thank you very much. You qualified definitely tubing. And the other gentleman mentioned you could find out about wind loads. And thank you from the E3JIW back to K2RIW in the Met.
Quick comment about that, Jim.
Yeah, Barry N2MB, the guy you're about to hear from, he lives right at the seashore on the southern tip of Long Island, a place called Far Rockaway, where he gets a whole lot of howling wind off of the Atlantic Ocean with salt spray. He's had a 70 or 80 foot high self-standing tower for at least 30 years that I know about, so he's a man who's been through a lot of stressing of metals that hold up sky wires and antlers up in the air. So give us some of the results of your experience, Barry. N2 Moonbound, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, yeah, I just want to comment. If he's going to use an aluminum mast, which I think is fine, if he's going to do that, you have to have a thrust bearing where it comes out of your rotator and goes to the top of your tower. You just have to have it. And the problem is that the aluminum, when it rubs against the metal, it's going to wear out. Now, I've actually had very good aluminum pipes, thick wall stuff, practically cut in half just because it was rubbing where it went through that hole. So you really, if you get a little play in the rotator, you know, and the thing is shaking back and forth, it's definitely going to cut through that pipe. That's the only thing. I think you're absolutely right about the mast. The only thing that I don't necessarily agree is we tend to spend a lot of money on U-bolts because we want them to be stainless steel. And that's all good and well. But I find that the other U-bolts, the galvanized bolts, are so much cheaper that when it comes time you have to take this stupid thing apart, if you just take an electric saw and cut them off and replace them with new ones, it's cheaper that way than going with the stainless steel. Also, I've had some of the nuts on the stainless steel U-bolts, I've had them freeze, so I try to take the nut off and it would break the bolt. And I've had that happen so many times, I gotta believe that's a problem other people would have too. H-O-R-W-N-2-M-B.
Fascinating. If it really was a stainless steel U-bolt with a stainless steel nut, in theory, that's supposed to, even in your severe salt spray, that's not supposed to freeze and rust itself in position. It's supposed to be rust-free. Maybe some anti-seize compound would be helpful. I know you can save a lot of money with steel hardware, even though it may look like it's galvanized, but very few steel bolts are really hot-dip galvanized, and even then, in your environment, I don't think I would trust it for more than about 15 years, and then the galvanizing will be continuously sacrificing. What you should really try to do, in my opinion, is do not put up an aluminum tower. I'm strongly against aluminum tower. The tower itself should be steel, galvanized. The hardware that's on the tower should be stainless steel and aluminum. That's my opinion. Don't put any rustable materials anywhere on the tower, because as that rust drips down the tower, your galvanizing on the tower will sacrifice itself to that rust.
Station was full scale Massapequa Park.
Yeah, thank you, Rich. When you guys listen to the input frequency, if you hear things that you think should not be there, please report what you hear to RFI at limox.org. Write down the signal strength that you heard on the input. Write down the time at which you've heard it, and report that to www.rfi@limox.org. Please give us that information. There's a person at Limox collecting that information, and it turns out to be very handy. But what I'm getting at is do not put any rustable materials on your tower.
Yeah, I'm getting an S9 signal in Huntington. S9. The rustable materials will cause your tower to sacrifice its galvanizing.
Okay, did you get that?
Okay, did somebody say, did I get that? What was that? At my location, and thank you, Joe, for your signal report. Whenever two pieces of metal come together, and one is going to rip. Mechanical engineers almost never recommend putting two identical pieces of metal together that have to rub against each other without some kind of. If your U-bolt is sliding on it, U-bolt up a saddle,
is sliding on the aluminum tubing back and forth because the antenna was swinging in the wind. It will eventually. And so you have to make sure that no sliding of any hardware on the aluminum takes place. You obey that law, and after that you'll be amazed how much strength and longevity you get out of 6061T6 aluminum tubing from my experience. And again, when you go to that website, Limark at technet.com, you'll see pictures of a very elaborate set of horizontal and vertical pieces of aluminum tubing all held together with U-bolts, stainless steel U-bolts. And yes, I'll admit that stainless steel U-bolts with the right kind of a saddle that goes with them, they are very pricey. Now, Barry has saved himself a lot of money by using steel, and you could be painting it periodically with cold-dip galvanizing in order to stop the steel from rusting. As long as you're willing to replace that, the cold-dip, hot-dip galvanizing, here we go, cold-dip galvanizing.
Not using it on the tower, Dick. It's only for the aluminum stuff.
Understand. But if there is a steel bolt from the aluminum, and if any of the rust of that steel manages to drip down on your tower, it will cause sacrificing of the galvanizing, the zinc plating of your tower. I wonder if you ever run into that one.
Stainless steel screws.
Okay, stainless steel screws. But if any rustable materials are on your antenna structures, and if it's capable of dripping rust down onto the steel, or even if it's just electrical contact between the rusting material through the aluminum, that in turn comes in contact with the galvanizing of your tower, the galvanizing of the tower will sacrifice itself to the rusting. The smarter people make sure that no rustable materials are anywhere in the vicinity of a galvanized tower. That's a bunch of strong opinions, but some people have that. You may have a slightly different opinion on this one, Barry. N2MB, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, I actually do. I find that hasn't been a problem. I can't use anything aluminum or anything. I can't use anything that's metal on the tower. I have all galvanized bolts holding the tower together, and I agree with you on that. But as far as the antenna, I don't think enough of it gets on the tower to compromise. The tower is probably 40-something years old, and the galvanized coating is starting to go, but it's not from the metal bolts. It's just the fact that I live near the salt, and it's taking a hell of a beating, you know.
I think I see what you're saying, Barry. You're saying as long as there's a long enough distance between the rustable steel bolts connecting to aluminum and it's not in the near vicinity of the galvanized tower, then the galvanized tower is not going to suffer the disadvantage. You're probably right on that one. And you could save an awful lot of money. You and I know a guy up in Maine who can get us stainless steel U-bolts and saddles at very nice sizes for a very nice price. I'll admit that my ordinary purchase in your normal place of purchase stainless steel U-bolts and saddles, they are very pricey. I'll admit that. And so, if you're willing to use steel, rustable steel bolts, that sometimes the ones you get a hold of have very light galvanizing on them, but you're willing to spray them with spray galvanized paint, cold galvanized painting, I think I've had some very good results with that of preventing rust. And you may have to repaint them every 5 or 10 years. And so we all should be checking on our hardware to make sure that nothing is sliding on the aluminum. So I know you're going to be doing some more research on this one, Jim. Whatever you find out, please come back and tell us. We're going to go on now to Rich, N2EO. N2EO, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick. Good evening, everybody, and good evening, Dick, and N2EO. Dick, first off, you got in Canada and K2EJ and K2UPS may have solved the problem for me that I brought up last week, which was that piece of EMT or whatever I was going to use on a vertical. Well, I think it was Eric, or maybe it was, I don't know who it was, K2UPS, who mentioned the company, I know the company, PX Engineering. I could probably get a nice price from them on a piece of aluminum pipe or aluminum tubing that would suffice. See, the problem getting around, well, you know the story, Dick. I have an amputation in my right leg, pretty darn high up, so I can't get to the scrap yards anymore. Anyway, wanted to bring up tonight is mobile operation, but not the normal mobile. Me and Hal were talking about it earlier today, and that is, you know, Barry in 2MB told me about a guy. He sees in Rockaway with a CB radio on an electric wheelchair, and it got me thinking, because I'm getting a, if you go on the internet, probably seen him on TV, it's called HoverRound, HOVERROUND. It's an electric powered wheelchair. I'm getting one through insurance, and I was thinking of mounting like a another Kenwood radio, 45 watts on 2, 35 watts on 440, with a mobile antenna. I wonder what your thoughts are, Dick. When is that going to be set? These wheelchairs, as far as I know, like I said, I haven't gotten it yet. It's got to go to one insurance. Use two batteries in them. The motor runs on 28 volts. Now, if I was talking to Hal about coming off one of the batteries for 13.8 volts, and he thought, like me, it would be an imbalance to drain current from one battery more than the other. So what we came up with the idea is to use some type of inverter to come off the two batteries at 13.8, knock it down to 28, knock it down to 13.8 to run the radio. I wonder what your thoughts are, if there's anybody on frequency who's gone mobile in a wheelchair, and where they mount the antenna, because it needs a ground plane. I guess that's what you call a true ham, having mobile everywhere. Go ahead, Dick, and to the go.
Yeah, I think I did hear a little bit of that discussion earlier today between you and Hal. I think I heard portions of it. And where your wheelchair has a pair of 12-volt batteries, I am guessing they're quite possibly going to be used in a series combination so that the wheelchair really runs on the 24 volts, so to speak. I do recommend that you do not connect to only one battery at a time. It's very tempting to be quick and dirty, since each battery is 12 volts, to connect to one of those and then run your rig off of it. There's two disadvantages of that. Number one, you're just like you suspected, you're unbalancing the system, only draining one battery as opposed to the pair. Second of all, many a radio, and my Kenwood 731, I think it is, my Kenwood 2-meter all-mode mobile rig, I discovered that it runs beautifully on 13.8 volts. Anything lower than about 12.2 volts in the sideband mode, it starts really misbehaving. It wants to see higher voltage. Well, when you're running from a mobile with an automobile with a battery being charged by the alternator, no problem. You get the right voltage. Let me drop. There are a significant number of rigs that when you run from a pure 12-volt battery that is not being charged, where the voltage being delivered by the battery is in the vicinity of 12.2 volts or so, and with the wiring drop, the actual rig is going to get to 12.0, 11.9. There are a number of rigs that really misbehave when it's designed for mobile operation and it's only getting 11.9, 12.2, those kind of voltages. A number of rigs, particularly in the sideband mode, the synthesizer starts hopping around, the sideband starts sounding ugly, terrible things happening. Therefore, for at least two reasons, if you are using a switching regulator running on the full 24 volts, both batteries in series, which I think is the way the current is using them themselves, a switching regulator can have very high efficiency, even though it's regulating from 24 volts down to 13.8. But now you're assured to really get the 13.8 to keep the rig happy, to keep it running well.
The switching regulator can be very efficient. You're draining both batteries simultaneously. In my opinion, that's the way to go. I'll admit that. Let me drop. Finding the switching regulator that's going to have your particular power rating, your particular size, easily convenient to add to your chair, your hover around chair, you know the chair you're talking about. I'm not familiar with it yet. But to find the right size switching regulator that takes 24 volts in and gives 13.8 out, that's going to take a little bit of search. It might even take some designing requirements from some of your friends, but electronically, that's the right way to go. Training both of them simultaneously and being sure you've got the right voltage to keep the rig happy and the whole system stays balanced. Then after that, all you've got to worry about is how many miles have you driven with the chair, what percentage of discharge has the chair experienced, how many hours have you transmitted 100 watts with the rig, how much has that discharged the batteries, and you don't want to be stuck in the middle of Main Street with a dead battery because you're on the rig hollering Mayday, if you know what I mean. But I get the picture right now, Rich, and it sounds like a fun type operation. I think you can see a little bit about where I'm going, and quite possibly Hal also gave you a somewhat similar suggestion. I'll admit that in the beginning, finding that fancy switching regulator, it's going to be a little bit troublesome, I think, because it's not a normal off-the-shelf, everyday type switching regulator, 24 in and 12 out. N2EO, K2LIW in the TechNet. Yeah, stand by. I think Hal's going to give us some more words on this one. K6DP, doing permanent down. Here we go. DPZ, K2LIW. Go ahead, Hal.
By the way, for the beep check, and hello everybody on TechNet. Yeah, my other comment was, if he wants to do it real cheap and dirty, go right off to 28 volts, get a 15 amp Zener diode at 14 volts, put that in series with his radio, put a protective Zener diode across the radio with a fuse, and you've got to cheap and dirty for about 14 volts going into the radio with regulation.
Yeah, the good news with that operation is it's nice and simple, and it will give you exactly the right voltage with the right amount of protection. The bad news is that when you're using resistive voltage drop, to drop the 24 volts down to 12 in that manner, half of your power is being wasted in that resistor. And to do that in the beginning just to get on the air, I can agree with it, but as a permanent installation, Rich is a guy who likes to be green, he likes the system to be efficient. If half of all the power his rig is using is going to be burned up in a resistor, dropping the 24 volts down to 13, I think it's eventually going to bother him. That's an opinion. It's a good, safe way to go in the beginning, but I wouldn't want to do that permanently because the waste of power would eventually bother me. Maybe Rich thinks differently. N2EO, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Any resistor, Dick.
Okay, no matter how you drop it without a switching regulator, you're going to be dissipating power. So how are you going to do the voltage drop without a switching regulator? K6DPZ, K2LIW?
This big 15-amp Zener diode in series, you're going to dissipate power, but the cheap and dirty way of doing it, it'll maintain a constant output with varying current load.
Okay. If the voltage he was getting out was exactly half the voltage he's putting in with the Zener diode, I predict that that will be a 50% efficient voltage regulator. Do you agree with that one or disagree with that one, Hal? Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be lossy. I'm not disagreeing with that, but it's cheap and dirty, and he can get his 14 volts out to run his radio from his 28-volt source. He just put a nice size heat sink on that, and the time he's using it transmit versus receive, the duty cycle, it's not going to get that hot over a period of time. Granted, it's not overly efficient, but it's a poor man's way of doing it.
Okay, that is an approach. But because he's running on batteries, and you've got to be energy-wise when you're running out of battery because batteries are very easy to kill and suddenly run out of power at a very inconvenient time. So as a way to get him on the air in a hurry, I agree. It's the quickest way. but I think he should continuously look for that magic switching regulator that can give him 90% efficiency as opposed to the 45 or 50% efficiency he's going to get with the pure Zener approach.
So a handy talkie with a mobile antenna on it.
Okay, give us the full statement there, Barry. Now wait for the beeps, but repeat what you just said, Barry. Go ahead.
And what if we just get a good, some of these handy talkies are up to 5 watts or something, get a good HT and use a mobile antenna, you know. That should work great.
Talking to his repeater buddies, you're absolutely right. However, I the rich I know eventually is going to want HF operation with a slightly more elaborate rig, is my guess. Let's see what Rich has got to say on this one. N2EO, K2LAW.
Okay, Dick. Now, I just want to be able to get into Mr. Peter, Weimark 440, and I use 440700 in Queens. If I could get into these repeaters, I'd be happy. But I don't think I'm going to do any of them with an HT and a mobile antenna on a wheelchair. So I don't know. I'm really not sure. But anyway, that was my thought. And by the way, Dick, I don't know how much it's going to tell you, but if you go to the website for HOVERROUND, you'll see a picture of it. It's not going to tell you anything. It's a motorized wheelchair, but the thing is, they're going to be coming here to show me how to use it and put it together. I think if I ask them for insurance reasons and they're wanting to stick their neck out, they're not going to give me any information. By the way, it does have a reset. It does have a gauge that shows battery state, and I was very surprised. The company told me that it's got a range of 18 to 20 miles. That's amazing, even with the good battery technology they have today. But, you know, somebody told me the company Samlex makes some type of a regulator, and also I think West Mountain Radio does. So I'm going to check these companies tomorrow and see what the story is. But that's what I want, good communications from the wheelchair, Dick. How's that for Leo Ham Radio?
FCC-52, put in for the inverter.
Yeah, Joe.
Dick.
Yeah. In order to have reliable communication, he's going to want mobile power of, let's say, 40 watts so that he can really get to the repeaters he wants. And Joe, you've got information on the regulator. Here we go, the switching regulator, KG2T, K2RIW. We're waiting for some good info, Joe. Go ahead.
DT.
Good evening again, Dick. Yes, Cantrix Instrument in Toronto, Canada, makes various types of inverters, from 12 up to whatever you want, and from 24 or whatever down to whatever you want, in any combination, any current rating that you want. Kendrick Instrument in Toronto, Canada. I've bought their equipment. It's commercially made. It's not cheap, but it's as reliable as can be. Dick, over to you.
It's another approach, Dick, N2MD.
Dick, let him spell that for me in Toronto. I didn't get the name.
Yeah, is that Kendrick's? K-E-N-D-R-I-C-X? Yeah, C-S? Is that what it was, Joe? Go ahead.
So, Roger, you got it.
Okay, K-E-N-D-R-I-C-S. Instrument in Toronto, Canada. So they got all kinds of good switching regulators. He's going to want 40 watts mobile just to make sure he's got good coverage. Was someone else want to make another comment? By the way, Barry, I'm going to, as soon as we finish this subject, I'm going to jump over to Joe, W2RYY, who's got to get up at 3:30 in the morning. So we got to release him, and then I'll come back to you, Barry. Who was the person who had another comment on this subject on the floor, K2RYW?
It was me, Barry.
Go ahead, Barry.
Okay, yeah, I understand that Richie is going to buy a TS-2000.
And I have a TS-2000. I also have the handy talkie that works with it. And with that handy talkie, you can communicate with your TS-2000 and go on any band from 160 meters to 1296 in any mode. And you use the handy talkie to communicate with the TS-2000. Now, that's not crazy, because I understand that Richie is going to buy a TS-2000. That would solve his problem.
On a quick break, what kind of range do you get from the handy talkie to the 2000? If I understand correctly, the 2000 is at the home QTH connected to a good antenna, and the handy talkie talks to it in any mode you want. And what's your guess as to what kind of range he'll get on that handy talkie to the 2000 from his wheelchair? Over to you, Barry.
So where he lives and where he's going to go, he's probably not going to go more than 3 miles from the house. And I'm sure it'll work under that range. I'm sure it will.
I'd be right, Dick. Another very good suggestion. Okay. I got some good things going here. This is going to be a fun-looking rig. I'm looking forward to the pictures of that. Let me pick up with Joe. Let me drop first.
Hey, Sister Weinstein.
Okay, yep. Go ahead, Matt. Matt, you got a comment on this subject? Go ahead.
Affirmative. If the emails Nassau County Allies, Nassau County Allies has a member that is in a wheelchair that has a nice little setup on his electric scooter.
Okay, Nassau County Aries has suggestions on a electrically powered chair and how to hook it up. Is that essentially the message? Matt, you're going to have to give us a little bit more audio. Matt, go ahead.
Affirmative. There's a member in Nassau County Aries who is in an electric wheelchair who has a setup on his scooter, which he sets up for events and stuff. So if he emails Nassau County Allies, they'll forward the email to him, and maybe he'll get back to you.
Thank you very much, and to Rio. Matt, would you happen to know the call letters of the person at Nassau County Aries where he can send the message directly to? Would you happen to know the call letters of the man with that chair, Matt? Go ahead.
I would just send a general email to info@nassaucountyalleys.org. info@nassaucountyalleys.org. Ask about the member in the wheelchair with his setup. So you know there's a member in Nassau County Alleys wheelchair. You would like him to contact you with more information. I don't want to give out his specific call without his okay first.
Now that makes a lot of sense, and I understand. Well done, Matt. Thank you. Let me go over to Joe because he's got to start getting some shut eye. I hope Joe's still with us. W-A-2-R-Y-Y. Go easy with us, Joe. You ask some pretty tough questions sometimes. K2RAW in the TechNet. You got a joke? Maybe he had to leave us already. One more call. W-A-2-R-Y-Y. Joe, are you still with us? K2RAW in the TechNet. Okay, maybe Joe didn't have to leave. Okay, yeah, Barry, you had a question into Moonbounce, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, my question only take a second or two. Last week, or maybe it was the week before, I'm not sure, you said that 4 RIWs would be better than a 10-foot dish on 432. How much gain do you think I would get out of a 10-foot dish, and how much gain would I expect to get out of 4? I think it's 19 elements, those things, but I have a bunch of them. You know what they are, though. N2MB.